Special Committee on Fisheries meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. Let the record reflect that it is 10 a.m. Today we have present Representative Hemshute, Representative Stutes, and myself, Chair Vance. I'd like to remind the committee members and those in the audience that I do like to begin my committees on time. And please silence your cell phones. If the phone rings while we are in committee, you may be obligated to bring donuts for everyone next committee meeting. It is just an unspoken rule around here. Helps with morale. So the staff assisting us today is Justin Hayes with House Records. Thank you. And Emma Turner with the Juno LIO. Today's agenda, the committee will take up House Joint Resolution 5, Alaska Fisheries, and in its first hearing by Representative Hemshute. We'll also take up invited and public testimony on this resolution and then set it aside. So I'd like to welcome Representative Hemshute and her staff to the table. Please state your names for the record and begin your presentation. And I'd like the record to reflect that Representative Johnson has joined us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Vance. Good morning to the committee. I want to start by wishing everyone a happy Valentine's Day. And if there's one thing Alaskans love, it's our fishermen. So we're going to talk about some fishermen today. I also wanted to express gratitude to Chair Vance for the mentorship in getting to the table today. So this is my first resolution. I'm very excited to be here. I've brought my staff, Thatcher Brower, who will help me. He's going to be my lifeline. So the resolution that we're looking at today is in support of the trawlers. And when I talk about trawlers, I'm talking about 1,500 fishermen, just under 1,500 fishermen. It's a low-barrier fishery, so when we talk about a fishery that's welcoming to anyone, just about anybody can get out there and become a trawler. And as a result of that, it's a high-dollar fishery for our region in Southeast Alaska, and it also, you'll find trawlers in every community of Southeast Alaska. I don't know if there's a community without at least one trawler, no matter how small the community. So it's a very important fishery for Southeast Alaska. And 85% of the trawlers in the fleet are Alaska residents. So these are people who are hook and line fishing. So when they put their line in the water, it's a very sustainable fishery. They're going to pull up a salmon. So this incredible homegrown fleet of fishermen doing the hard work that brings in about $85 million to our economy in Southeast Alaska is under attack. And they've been attacked by the Wild Fish Conservancy. There's a lawsuit that started in 2019, and this resolution is going to urge state and federal agencies to continue defending our trawlers. The lawsuit in 2019, and this is where I might have to have some help from Thatcher, but the lawsuit basically states, it's complicated because it has to do with the Pacific Salmon Treaty, negotiated every 10 years. Within that treaty, there is a biological opinion written about basically impacts of the fishery, and there's an incidental take statement that allows our trawlers to continue fishing for Chinook. And at this point, if it's okay, I'll have Thatcher take over with more of the details of how we got to where we are right now with our trawlers potentially being shut out of their winter and summer fisheries. And again, this is a fishery that contributes to our economy most of the year. So it's really important to us, and Thatcher's going to give a little more detail on the lawsuit itself.
Before you do that, I'd like to let the record reflect that at 10:02 we were joined by Representative McCormick and Representative McKay. Please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Thatcher Brower, staff to Representative Hemshute. Before I begin, I guess just in interest of full disclosure, I would like to mention that in the summer, when I'm not working for the legislature, I am a commercial troller, and I do serve on the Alaska Troller Association Board. Just want to make sure that's on the record. In an attempt to kind of better or to give some background information to explain how we got to where we are today, where the troll fishery is potentially going to be shut down any day now by Judge Jones's decision, I'd like to just give a little bit of background that Representative Hemshute touched on, and hopefully that'll help members better understand why we're where we are. So back in 2019, the Pacific Salmon Treaty was renegotiated. It's renegotiated every 10 years. And as part of that negotiation, the National Marine Fisheries Service After they decided the quotas for each the British Columbia, Alaska, and Washington, and Oregon, the National Marine Fisheries Service is responsible for creating this biological opinion, and part of that biological opinion is this so-called incidental take statement, and that allows the parties or the fishermen that are part of the Pacific Salmon Treaty harvesting salmon to take a few endangered Chinook salmon or Chinook salmon that might eventually end up in the mouths of endangered species such as southern resident killer whales. And then in addition to allowing that, there are also mitigating measures that are part of that incidental take statement. And one of the mitigating measures that the National Marine Fisheries Service proposed was additional hatchery production of Chinook salmon in Washington. And so in 2020, the Wild Fish Conservancy sued National Marine Fisheries Service sued to invalidate the biological opinion, and they sought to in part of that suit was to halt the production of Chinook salmon. The Wild Fish Conservancy has been a serial litigant. They've I think they brought around 20 cases, mostly down in Washington, but now there's up here impacting our fishery, and a lot of those cases have been around hatchery production of salmon in Washington. So part of their suit was to halt the production of Chinook salmon that was a mitigating measure for the trawler's take of Chinook salmon. In addition, they sought to invalidate the incidental take statement. And without this incidental take statement, the troll fishery is not allowed to proceed. It's one of the requirements that we have to meet to be able to go fishing. In September of 2021, Magistrate Judge Peterson issued a report and recommendations finding the analysis governing the Columbia River Prey Increase Program was flawed, and the incidental take statement governing the troll fishery was also deficient. And then in August of 2022, Judge Jones adopted that report and recommendations, and you'll see a press release from the Department of Fish and Game in your packet. Announcing their concern with that finding. The National Marine Fisheries Service is in the process of rewriting the biological opinion, as they've been asked to do, but it's going to take a couple of years. And then since the adoption of that initial report and recommendations, they've been in this remedy phase. They're trying to figure out how to account for the flaws in the biological opinion. And like I said, in December 2022, Magistrate Judge Peterson again recommended the report and recommendations that would invalidate the incidental take statement for both the winter and summer troll fisheries. The troll season is year-round. There's a winter troll season that goes from early October through, depending on the year, through as late as the end of April. And then there's a short spring troll season, which is usually May and June. And then there's a summer troll season, which is July through September. And we're not certain why, but for whatever reason that the judge decided that they want to end the winter and summer Chinook retention. And currently where it stands now is that Judge Joan is again deliberating on this report and recommendations put forward by Magistrate Judge Peterson. And that ruling was likely any day now. It's there's no more room to appeal. There's an opportunity for the interveners, including the state of Alaska and Alaska Troller Association, to submit comments on the report and recommendations, and that period's ended. It ended, I believe, the 25th of January of this year, and so we're just waiting for Judge Jones's decision, and then depending on the decision, the next step would be to appeal this case to the Ninth Circuit Court, and there's a potential that the interveners or whoever appeals the case would be able to request a stay that would allow the fishery to continue to be prosecuted while the Ninth Circuit Court takes up the appeal.
So it's clearly a very complex issue, but I think we can boil it down to the 3% of the Chinook that might possibly result in a meal for a southern resident killer whale is what we're fighting for right now, and the rights of our 1,500 trawlers to continue their livelihood. And so the state has joined in as an intervener in the suit. We want to support that. We have resolutions. I think you'll have, you may have copies of some of those in your packet from many Southeast communities, Sitka, Petersburg, Ketchikan, Yakutat, Port Alexander, and then Craig, Juneau, Wrangell, and Hoonah are considering resolutions. And something I find incredibly heartening is the fundraisers that have taken place across Southeast Alaska and the donations that have come in from processors and other entities to support the trollers in the lawsuit. So the state is helping where they can. There have been a lot of private dollars flowing in to support the trollers. And we have some folks who are going to call in with some invited testimony, and we're happy to take questions, but you might listen to them first, because I think they'll have a lot of background to maybe fill in any gaps that we've left, and appreciate your time.
All right, I'd like to welcome Representative Ortiz to the committee today. And if you don't mind, we have a couple of questions for you already, but you can, you know, phone a friend if you need to. So first we have Representative McCabe and then Rep. Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair, so this is something that I find interesting. How many of the 1,500 trollers are homeported in Seattle?
I can't tell you for sure Seattle, I guess through the chair. I can't say for sure in Seattle, but 85% are homeported somewhere in Southeast Alaska.
So 85% through the chair, 85% of them are Alaskan fishermen, essentially.
And where is... I'm sorry. 100% of the fishing would be here in Southeast. So even if they're homeported elsewhere, the fish they're catching are local fish.
Okay, follow up. This Wild Fish Conservancy, where are they based? Or do you know?
I'll let Thatcher answer that.
Madam Chair, Representative McCabe, the Wild Fish Conservancy is based in Seattle.
Okay.
Follow up?
Thanks. So is this all we're doing? Follow up, thank you. Is this all we're doing is the resolution, or do we have other things in the works? You guys can imagine where I'm going with this. So, just the resolution and...
Through the chair, the resolution's intent is to encourage the actions already undertaken by the state and looking forward to what may be more lawsuits to come, including in this suit.
Okay, thanks. Nice to see you again, Mr. Brar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, just for the record, is the troll fishery in Southeast a limited entry fishery?
Once again, thank you, through the chair. I'll defer to Thatcher.
Madam Chair, Representative Stutes, the troll fishery is a limited entry fishery.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you give me a ballpark on the value of those permits?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, the permit value is approximately $30,000 and for a power troll permit. And to clarify, there are two types of trolling. There's there's hand trolling and there's power trolling. And the hand troll permit value is roughly around $10,000. The power troll permit value is roughly around $30,000.
All right, seeing no further questions at this time, we have invited testimony. Is there an order that you prefer?
Madam Chair, if we could start with Ms. Amy Doherty, she's here in the room, that would be great.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Doherty. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Amy Doherty, Alaska Trollers Association Executive Director.
Please begin.
I don't really have a prepared testimony. I thought I'd tell you guys what trolling is like. It is a low-impact hook-and-line fishery in which they bring aboard fish one at a time. We are very dependent on Chinook. We catch generally Chinook and coho. And sometimes now we have a developing chum fishery. So that's about it for us. This happened in 2020, in the spring of 2020. We intervened on our own behalf because we were named in the lawsuit. And it has been a wild ride ever since, you know, having attorneys paying out, doing a ton of fundraising. I'm really very proud of the communities and our fishermen who are paying attention to this, and there's quite a few of them, and also support industries. Most of our businesses are family run, very low-key. Trolling is a slow speed as far as impact to local orcas. They're, you know, minimal, if any. And we do gain top dollar for our fish because it is handled one by one. We have a 13-member board, all trollers, of course. That's been very active, a working board, so hence all of the localized resolutions that you have and letters of support. I'm here mostly just to answer questions on this lawsuit and whatever you need to know about the fishery.
How long has this been, this fishery been, is this a new fishery? Has this been going on for quite some time?
It is such an old fishery. We have been, well, Alaska Trollers Association, I think it was 1924 that we were formed. So it's really an old group. We have troll data going back to 1911, which is when they first started catching or harvesting, collecting fisheries data. And some say it predates, the fishery even predates 1911. So, what we've had are three Pacific Salmon Treaty negotiations, which have definitely impacted or reduced our harvest of Chinook. But, you know, we have, of course, supported conservation measures, and that's where we are. So if you look at a chart of our harvest through the years, it definitely has declined.
Has there been concerns about impact to the orcas prior to this?
Never. In fact, it's our understanding that every other orca population up and down the coast is healthy and in fact increasing, except for this localized Puget Sound population.
Are there other stated concerns besides the amount of Chinook for the orca population that has been proven?
I'm not sure this answers your question, but just this morning I saw a bill in the Washington legislature which seeked to expand the amount of distance between whale watching vehicles or vessels in that area to protect the orca. So it's by some at least acknowledged that that is a factor. There are other factors that we believe. We don't believe that any commercial fishing up and down the coast is really what's impacting the orca population. We believe that it's largely a toxicity issue. There's a lot of population down there. There's a lot of runoff. I'm sure you're aware there was concern a few years ago about tires somehow diminishing the fertility of certain stocks. I'm not sure they were king salmon stocks, but even the Washington State websites show that it is a concern as far as toxicity in that area. And I should have brought some pictures for you off of their website. So that's what we're dealing with in reality.
All right. Do we have any further, Representative McCabe?
Thank you. Through the chair. So why did they pick you?
That's a great. It's kind of the low-hanging fruit. We have little means besides from our will to, defend ourselves versus some of the bigger fisheries that certainly have lobbyists and a lot more means than we do. It's really just incomprehensible, just the fact that such a low impact fishery would be the target of this group.
Follow up.
So through the chair, low impact to me means, as we've talked about before in this committee, every fishery has bycatch issues, right? And certain fisheries, the mortality of bycatch is higher than other fisheries. And so when you say low impact, and I'm hearing sustainability, when you have a fish that's not a Chinook, you let it off the hook and it lives, essentially, probably, in my opinion. So
we have size limits, excuse me, through the chair. We have size limits, and so there is some bycatch, meaning if it's a small fish. And, trollers are generally of the mindset of a very environmentalist mindset, where we realize that fish, if it lives, is going to come back and benefit us potentially in the future. So we are very careful, and it is minimized. And you're right, we can't bring halibut aboard. We can't bring a lot of things aboard if they are caught.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. And we will, if we have further questions, we know that you're available.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Vance. I think we have three more people who we've invited to call in. Can we go to either Casey or Tim next?
We have, is it Casey Mapes? Did I pronounce that correctly? If you are online, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have 5 minutes for a testimony.
Thank you. Through the chair, my name is Casey Mapes. I'm a lifelong commercial fisherman in Yakutat, Alaska. I've been a troller and a gill netter and a longliner for over 50 years. In our community, I wanted to comment on this. In our community, trolling is a huge portion of our income. And in particular, in the winter months, when all of the summer activities, all the lodges are shut down, all the sports fishermen are gone, there's nothing else. A commercial trolling is the only thing open. There's not even longlining until March. So the only thing that our processor has to operate on is the fish that we bring in, and we're solely supporting the economy of our community for the better part of the winter season. And just speaking for myself, I would say that out of my troll income, king salmon is probably 2/3 of what I make in a year's time. So we get, so long of a period of time to fish in the winter that that's where I'm the most active, and it's a big, huge portion of what I survive on. We have a large number of other fishermen here that are equally as dependent on it. I would like to just make note of that this is a big part of what our towns depend on. It's been encouraging to see all the entities in our community step forward and try to help support our cause. I'm hopeful that the state will as well. The other thing that I would like to add to that is when you're involved in the other fisheries, when you're chasing a coho or when you're gill netting for a sockeye or whatever it is besides Chinook, those are all lucrative as well, but they're not what catching a Chinook is. To me, what being a fisherman is all about is being able to dream about having that big one on. And that means a Chinook. When you're talking cultural aspect to a native person, catching a Chinook is part of your lifeblood here in Southeast Alaska. have that taken away from you, it's like taking the rifle away from a hunter and telling them they got to chase it with a stick. You know, it's just, you're not going to be the same person anymore after that. That's who we are. And so it hurts extra special bad in that particular manner. And the other thing that I wanted to call your attention to in my time here is, I'm old enough fella to remember how the spotted owl thing went. And while the intentions may have been good at the start, where they went with that was they wound up, once the precedent was set, taking it over and over and over again and reusing it as a weapon. And I'm deeply concerned that that's what we're looking at here. If you don't dig your heels in and help get this lawsuit squashed, you're going to see it again, over and over again. Once they get a taste, the question came up earlier in previous comments, why you? Why trollers? I think I can answer that. It's because we're sort of the weaklings of the fleet. We're the smallest with the least amount of money behind us. And it's where they can get their roots established first. Once they do that and they get their precedent, they make no mistake that they're going to come for the rest. Once they can reuse it, they'll be back to court again. I could see them showing up someday, maybe even suing our own Department of Fish and Game. And you guys don't know what you're doing. We need a sheriff for the Eagles now, too, and over again until all of the experts that we pay to monitor and maintain our healthy stock are going to be pushed to the side, and we're going to be regulating out of the courthouse from now on. I'm deeply concerned about that. And these were the comments that I wanted to share with you. It's a huge portion of Yakutat's economy and a huge portion of all of the Southeast communities. I'm thankful that you're considering helping us out. Over.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Mapes. Do we have any questions from the committee members? Next, we have Tim O'Connor. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony. You have 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and everybody. My name is Tim O'Connor. I am the mayor of Craig, Alaska, also vice president of the Alaska Trollers Association. I'm a troller and a longliner and have been since 2008. Craig has a population of just under 1,000 people within the city limits, and we have another 500 population outside of, in the subdivisions outside of the city adjacent to Craig. Prince of Wales has a population of approximately 4,000 people. Craig is the main port of Prince of Wales Island, ranked 30th in the nation for commercial seafood landings, and 21 million pounds of fish come into this port. And 52nd in the nation in value, that's $22.7 million into this port. These rankings are based on the top 137 ports in the United States. Fishing is now the mainstay of Craig's economy since logging is all but gone on Prince of Wales Island. Commercial salmon trolling is a significant portion of our fishing fleet. Our fleet on Prince of Wales Island is over 100 boats with 120 charter boats also operating out of Craig each year. Charter fishery is also key to our economy. We stand to lose all of this if this Wild Fish Conservancy lawsuit is successful. While the lawsuit primarily concerns the troll industry at this point, we are a risk of losing in all other gear groups also. The charter opportunities, subsistence fishing, if this suit is successful, it'll set a precedent. We will have at least one charter fisherman in Craig who recently shut down his operations in Seattle due to activity by the Wild Fish Conservancy shutting them down there. making it impossible to conduct operations there. So he moved to Craig to open up his industry here, and now it's under attack. The Alaska Trollers Association and the city of Craig need to help the state's help and resources to stop this lawsuit and to challenge our state's right to manage our own fisheries. Please strongly consider this joint resolution and committing resources to help and protect the commercial fishing and the state's right to manage those fisheries. Thank you, madam, and just thank you for the opportunity to speak here.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. O'Connor. Do you have any questions from committee members? Representative McCabe.
Thank you. Through the chair, so I'm interested to know, you know, the lawsuit makes good use of the word unsustainable. In fact, it makes much use of the word unsustainable in your fishery. So previous testimony said it was started in 1911. In your opinion, as a troller, are we managing the resource for sustainability? Is the state actually managing the resource for sustainability, or are we just going out there and taking every fish we can?
No, it's being managed for sustainability, in my opinion. We have three hatcheries currently operating in the vicinity of Craig within 5 miles of town. There's three of them. One of them is the Chinook hatchery. We hatch our own king salmon out. It's hatched over in Ketchikan, the smolt are brought here and released in Port St. Nick. And there's 560,000 of those smolt released last year, and there'll be a return this year of approximately 450,000 were released 3 years ago. Those fish are fished on through the winter and as well as the spring and summer openers. I get a report every year from Fishing Game showing me the fish that are caught and where they come from if they're tagged. They put wire tags in the head so we know where they come from. Only four of them this year ever come from anywhere south of Alaska, and they were mostly Columbia River fish. They had nothing to do with Puget Sound. This is the mainstay of our economy here. You know, if we lose this, pretty much our town's going to just basically go away. There won't be nothing left if they shut down this troll fishery.
Follow up.
Is it?
Thanks. So
go ahead.
Yeah. One more question. So I guess with all those fish that are coming out of the hatchery, the orcas or the killer whales, they don't eat those because it's the hatchery fish are not good enough for them. Or I guess I'm unclear of this ridiculous lawsuit. We're actually feeding the orcas with our hatchery fish and yet they're, I don't know. Does an orca, which is a mammal, it's not a fish. So does an orca actually eat the hatchery fish, or do they just not eat them because they're from a hatchery?
I don't have the scientific knowledge of that, but I would assume they eat hatchery fish the same as they eat the wild fish. And there are hatcheries in Puget Sound and around Puget Sound that those fish feed those orcas down there. Our fish and our hatcheries here very seldom go that far south. They do in younger stages of their life, and then they migrate back up the coast, and they pass there. So a few of ours could actually end up orca chow. So basically, yeah, our fish would be feeding their orcas.
Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor, for your testimony. Next, we have Tad Foyoka. I apologize if I mispronounced your name. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 5 minutes for testimony.
Can you hear me?
You're coming through now.
Oh, okay. Yes, sorry about that. Yes, my name is Tad Fujioka. Before I begin, I'd like to confirm that the committee was able to receive the two handouts that I submitted earlier. Did they receive those?
Yes, it is up on the screen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you to the staff that made that happen. Appreciate that. So Yes, my name is Tad Fujioka. I'm a troller out of Sitka. Happen to be the chairman of the board of directors of our local cooperative, but I'm speaking for myself today. So thank you for allowing me to present to the committee here. I'm a 47-year Alaska resident, and for the last 43 years, I've been a king salmon fisherman. As has been noted, king salmon are special to all Alaskans, whether we catch them or we eat them. In particular, my wife said she wanted fresh king salmon dinner for Valentine's Day. Fortunately for both of us, I was able to catch her one last week. I liked salmon fishing so much that in 2010, I bought a permit and became a commercial troller. And somehow or another, like I said, I became the chairman of the board of directors of the Seafood Producer Cooperative of 400 independent fishermen. And we're among the largest private employers in Sitka. Troll salmon are half our business, and we wouldn't have a company without them. Just to be clear, trolling involves towing baited hooks and lures through the water. Conceptually, that's very similar to rod and reel sport fishing. We're not trawling. We're using hooks and not nets. And because of that, our gear is highly selective. And since we catch our fish one at a time, ADF&G has time to carefully monitor our catch, and we can release our unwanted bycatch alive. The Alaska king salmon troll fishery is a highly mixed stock fishery. That means that trawlers automatically focus on the most abundant runs, and the fishery dynamically adjusts to harvest the private stocks without needing preseason forecasts of each run. As was pointed out, the king salmon troll fishery has a more than 100-year history, as you can see on handout A, and this history proves our sustainability far better than any theoretical analysis possibly could. Beginning in 1985, the treaty between the United States and Canada established quotas for our fishery at levels that were unfortunately well below our historic share, and they've continued to decline. The treaty allocation reflects not just the biologically sustainable limits, but also the political power, and that's the reason that Alaska's catch has only minimally reflected the benefits of conservation gains that the treaty has accomplished. Southeast Alaska, in particular rural Southeast, is heavily dependent on trolling, with more than 1,500 Alaskans having active troll permits. That's more than any other fishery in the state, and more than 10 times as many as Washington fishermen have in troll fishery. Overall, troll salmon are worth $20 to $40 million a year just to fishermen and generate more than $80 million in economic activity throughout the state. But this fishery, as noted, is threatened by the Washington State-based Wild Fish Conservancy, and they've sued National Marine Fisheries Service, claiming that the 423-page biological opinion pertaining to the treaty was insufficiently thorough. 423 pages wasn't enough for them. The Alaska Trolling Association and the state joined the lawsuit to help defend National Marine Fisheries Service and our fishery against the claim that the southern resident killer whales aren't getting enough to eat, and that our fishery, 700 miles away, is the reason to blame. Currently, WSC is asking for injunctive relief to close our summer and winter troll fisheries. These are frankly ridiculous claims. National Marine Fisheries Service recognizes that of the fish most important to orcas, very, very few of them are caught in Alaska. Specifically, the ones most critical to the southern resident orcas are Puget Sound Fall Chinook, of which Alaska only catches a few hundred a year, comprising a few tenths of 1% of our catch. As you can see on handout B, the Puget Sounds are the little tiny strip there above the Washington coastals. It's supposed to be green, but you can't even see the green because it just looks like a black line. That's how few of them there are. If trawlers can be shut down over this handful of fish, basically no fishery is going to be safe from this sort of lawsuit. Particularly since, in contrast to the few hundred Puget Sounds caught in Alaska, tens of thousands of those fish are caught in other fisheries close to Puget Sound. And if lack of prey was really a problem, that would be a big issue. But the lack of salmon isn't really the problem that the southern resident killer whales face. If it was, we wouldn't see that the Alaskan and British Columbia orca pods have been growing so steadily. If our fishery was the reason that southern residents were in trouble, the local orcas would be suffering a lot more than the ones hundreds of miles away. The real problem for southern residents is the pollution in Puget Sound. You know, there's 5 million people that live in the Puget Sound area. With all the heavy pollution and road runoff. It makes the local fish toxic. The Washington Department of Health recommends that people eat no more than 2 servings of Puget Sound king salmon per month. And, of course, the local killer whales eat a whole lot more than that. And that's made them some of the most contaminated marine mammals anywhere in the world. Kind of suggests that if an animal had any more poison in their body, they'd be dead instead of just suffering. Despite this, the WFC's lawyers have convinced Magistrate Peterson to recommend that Presiding Judge Jones vacate the permit that allows our fish to continue. That would be an absolutely ridiculous ruling and a ridiculous lawsuit. Governor Dunleavy has said that Alaska will appeal any adverse ruling, and we're very glad to have his support. And we appreciate your support, too, to protect our fishery. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Fujioka. Do we have any questions from committee members? Seeing none, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, question about the black and white slide that you have with the chart on it. The statement there, Chinook actually are more abundant now than during the treaty base period, 1979-82. I'm wondering if that data is something that is available, or where you're receiving that data from.
Through the chair, yes, the Pacific Salmon Commission's Chinook Technical Committee compiles a abundance index of Chinook in Southeast Alaska every year, and they've done that since every year since 1979, and it goes up and down, but that 79-82 base period is the lowest period of that length. There have been occasional single years that have been lower than during that period, but that's the lowest abundance of any span of that length since then. The treaty called for all parties to reduce their harvest to increase the escapement, and that's worked. There's more fish out there now than there used to be. Unfortunately, Alaska share doesn't reflect that abundance.
Thank you for your testimony. And I have some questions about the state intervening in this. And is Aaron Peterson available? If you would.
I am, Madam Chair. My line was just unmuted.
Thank you so much. So would you speak to why the state chose to intervene in this lawsuit? Please state your affiliation for the record.
Absolutely, I will do that. This is Aaron Peterson. I'm a senior assistant attorney general with the Department of Law. I've been handling this litigation for nearly 3 years now. And the state made the decision to intervene because it's critical to defend our fisheries. It reflects the commitment that the attorney general, Doug Vinsalang, the commissioner of Fish and Game, and quite frankly, the governor, has to defending our critical industries, commercial fishing being one of them. And we've evaluated this lawsuit from the beginning. We have litigated alongside the Alaska Trollers Association and the Department of Justice representing NIMFS. I'll also let the committee know that this litigation, as you heard, is occurring in Seattle, in the Western District of Washington Federal Court. And because it is not in our home jurisdiction, we had to procure local counsel to file our pleadings. And when we set about looking for local counsel to do that, we have the expertise to litigate these matters in-house, but we purposefully found a firm that has litigated these exact issues. In fact, there are very similar lawsuits on the East Coast, and we made the conscious decision to bring in even more expertise, again, reflecting how important we view these matters. And I'm available to answer any other questions that you have about the litigation.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. What would be the impact to the state fisheries if we were to lose this case?
Well, lose is, first, that term would have to be defined, Madam Chair. So essentially, if the Article 3 judge adopts the report and recommendation as it's currently written, the remedy on the report and recommendation on remedy. Then we have various options for appeal. And I think the governor has made clear the state's intention to continue to defend this fishery, whatever it takes. And so ultimately, there will be a new ITS in place. NIMS has explained in their pleadings that they are working on, you know, correcting the errors that the district judge found in the incidental take statement. And so worst case scenario would be the winter and summer troll fishery would be potentially closed for some period of time. Now that is, again, as I said, a worst case scenario. There are several things that would have to happen before we got to that point.
Thank you, Representative McCabe.
Thank you. Through the chair, is this sort of similar to the lower Cusco closure where the federal government has sort of taken away management of our state fisheries? Or will it be if it actually goes through?
Thank you for that question through the chair, Brett McCabe. No, that litigation in the Kuskokwim is related to the subsistence provisions in ANILCA. And that is a jurisdictional issue that is quite separate and apart from what we are dealing with in this litigation, which is simply a matter of federal environmental law, the Endangered Species Act and the National Environmental Policy Act. One of the things that the court found was that in addition to the ESA issues that we've discussed, is that the biological opinion, that is, violated the Endangered Species Act because it failed to evaluate prey increase program for the potential of jeopardizing endangered Chinook salmon and ESU's stocks in western Washington, evolutionary significant units. But so that is tied to also NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. The court also found that that was violated when NIPS failed to conduct necessary analysis for the issuance of the ITS related to the prey increase program. And there's been a few questions about why the trollers are targeted in this litigation. The history of the plaintiff in this case shows that they generally target hatcheries and hatchery-related litigation. And the prey increase program, of course, is a large hatchery program to offset the take of Chinook that would otherwise potentially be prey for the endangered southern residents.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this a public interest litigation, or are they footing the bill for this? The Wild Fish Conservancy.
Through the chair, I would not view this as public interest litigation. The answer is no, I guess. Just leave it at that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, if I might add to that, I have heard that the Wild Fish Conservancy in the past has been able to get reimbursed for some of these suits through the Equal Access to Justice Act, and I believe that they potentially could be reimbursed for their expenses this time around as well, if they prevail.
Could you put your name on the record for clarification?
I apologize. Thatcher Brower, staff representative for the record.
Thank you. Follow up, Representative Johnson?
Madam Chair, that actually was the question. We could be on the hook for this. Thank you. So we better win.
Any further questions for Mr. Peterson? All right. Thank you, Mr. Peterson, for making yourself available. Do we have any further questions from the sponsor of the resolution? All right. I will now open for public testimony for HJR 5. If Are there any? Is there anyone in the room who would like to provide any testimony? Seeing none, we will open that online, and I believe we will start at the top of my list with Mark Roberts from Petersburg. Please begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, my name is Mark Roberts. I'm from Petersburg, Alaska. I've been trolling for the last 45 years or so. And most of the people who actually just spoke before me have really said everything that's on my mind and stuff like that. I just wanted to add one more thing to of what Mr. Kevin McCabe was mentioning and stuff like that about the shake and release type of thing. I just wanted to mention that a lot of trollers now have found a lot of different ways to shake and release their fish to the point where we actually keep the fish alive. One of them is having a line on in the back with a big ring on it that we put through our tag line and then slides down to the flasher, and then it unhooks itself. And all this happens underwater. And so the fish never breaks the surface. It doesn't it's just a better way to shake the fish. So that's one thing that I just wanted to mention. And another thing that I wanted to mention, and that is I really think a lot of us should understand that the Section 7 is what they're after. And if we lose the Section 7, that's going to hurt the whole state. So that's all I really have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Next, we have Matt Donahoe from Sitka. If you would state your name and affiliation for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name's Matt Donahoe. I'm the president of the Alaska Trollers Association. I have like 8 points that are things that haven't been covered, and I just like to go down them. I've been a troller for 45 years also. Nobody's mentioned the problems that processors are having. Right now, they have to hire and contract packers. They have to hire their crews, and this is all up in the air. It's really a difficult problem for the processing sector. Another point here: why did Wild Fish Conservancy, which we call the World Fight Club, why did they pick trollers? They picked trollers because they have been engaged since 2006 in 34 lawsuits, 24 of which they were the plaintiffs. They are serial litigants. What they do is they look for a case that they think they have a wormhole in, and they descend on it, and they hope to make money through EJIA. They raise this particular case has been a real money maker for the Wild Fish Conservancy in Puget Sound. There's been story after story. They have incredible funding. I could go into that, but I won't right now. Net harvest. We're not claiming that any harvest is impacting this, and that includes sport. But I want to say this. The state of Alaska, ADF&G, reckons that we catch fewer than 600 Puget Sound king salmon a year. And the reason for that is because the migratory patterns of the Puget Sound king salmon don't come up to Alaska. Most of them don't go past Dixon Entrance, so we don't catch them. Is that it? That's my 2 minutes. I've got 5 more points.
I ask that you send your points to the House Fisheries email at housefisheries@aklug.gov. We would love to consider your full testimony.
I missed the beginning of that. I'm sorry.
housefisheries@akleg.gov.
Okay.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, okay. We have Eric Jordan from Sitka. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman Vance. My name is Eric Jordan. I have been salmon trolling since my parents took me trolling in March of 1950. I've been running my own troller since 1978 and have represented trollers in an elected or appointed representative every year since. My family, from my grandparents to my grandchildren, are trollers. I've been an activist for decades to conserve, sustain, and enhance our salmon runs and our troll industry. I support House Joint Resolution number 5. This existential threat to close down our southeast troll fishery in a fundraising charade by the Wild Fish Conservancy is a brutal assault on us that won't save one orca. It is the most vicious, misguided assault I have witnessed in a lifetime of experience with fisheries conflicts. I'm involved in a crew apprentice program where I took 25 people crewing last year. Schedule planning is totally disrupted by the uncertainty facing us. I ask you to join the hundreds of individuals and numerous businesses, communities, and groups rallying to our support. It will make a difference. I am willing to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Dave Ritchie from Sitka. Please state your name and affiliation. You have 2 minutes.
2 minutes, is that what I... Okay, yeah. Yes, hi. Thank you for your time, all. I appreciate it very much. My name is David Ritchie. I'm a commercial troller based in Sitka, Alaska, since 08. I had a couple pieces. One was in the Sitka Sentinel on the 20th of January, and the other was in the Juneau Empire on the 31st. And one of the questions that came up that people asked, how did we get here? And, you know, not just a statement of fact. I don't enjoy saying this at all, but there was a NIMS biop that put legal jeopardy for all Southeast Alaska fisheries. So why were trollers picked on? As I believe it was Amy Dougherty said, we were the low-hanging fruit. They went after us because they can. Maybe it's to establish a legal precedent. I'm not sure. But the thing that I'd like to convey to the committee is that if this lawsuit prevails, which is why it must be stopped, everyone that catches kings in Southeast Alaska is vulnerable to the same legal rationale. So I would really like to emphasize that. I'd also like to give props to the state of Alaska because I read their legal document. I thought their reasoning was excellent, and I thought it was a very clear document for, you know, lawyerly things. So you got to parse it out. But one of the things they said, and I also argued, and I just got lucky because I'm just a dumb fisherman, but the state of Alaska argued that the Pacific Salmon Treaty supersedes in authority any mistake or incorrect judgment call that NIMS made. So the state of Alaska argued that NIMS must rewrite the biop and the NEPA statement to put them in accord with the Pacific Salmon Treaty because it is the superseding authority. And one last thing I'd like to say, I guess I have 25 seconds, I'm timing myself, is that the wild fish conspiracy likes to say that we're unsustainable, which is an insulting argument about which I could say a lot. I would just leave you all with this. We've had, as Southeast Trollers, continuous uninterrupted Chinook troll fishery since data collection started in 1911. That's over 110 years. And that mere fact refutes WFC's ridiculous and insulting claim that the fishery is unsustainable. I thank you for your time, and I'll answer any questions you might have. Oh, do I have time left?
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Charles Dearcy from Ketchikan. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, please continue.
Yeah, this is Charlie Piercy. My bio is similar to all the ones that you've already heard, so I won't go into it. I have about 5 points here for you guys. 15% of the permits are all the way from California to the state of Washington. That was one of your questions. King salmon in Alaska is the best fish in the world, and trolling catches it and takes care of it the best in the world. So you're going to get rid of the best fish in the world. The only reason why, this is point number three, that they're picking on the trollers is we have the best data collection also. And so keep that in mind, because all these other fisheries aren't collecting king salmon data. We usually catch, well, we start out catching 95% of them before trees. This conservancy is anti-hatchery. I lived in Ketchikan, came here in the 70s, and a one pot of killer whale throwing right at the dump would be a big thing in the paper. Now there are two pods of killer whales traveling from Ketchikan to Neath Bay to local hatchery here, going by there constantly for 2 months. So we grow two, Sarah has grown two pods of killer whales, in my opinion. So it's not food supply again in Washington, Puget Sound area. It's other things. Combination everything. You're just going on one sphere. And the last point I put down here is you asked about sustainability. The state of Alaska, as you're well aware, in its constitution is maximum sustained yield per fishery. And that's what was the main point that drove statehood in the 59 or whenever in that area, so basically, if it's not sustained fishery, the state's been violating itself for over 50 years, which I don't seem as imaginable. So it's just, to me, this whole thing is on par with the Judge Bolt position. If it is ruled against it, it's going to be a major thing, and it's not. It's going to be the snowball. It's just starting. So let's get some torches out and melt it before it gets too big. So, thank you.
We do have a question by Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. Appreciate it very much. Charlie, thank you so much for taking the time for your testimony. I know you to be the longtime participant in the troll fishery, owner of the boat, the Tuckahoe, if I'm not mistaken. And I'd just like to thank you for taking the time and making the effort to share your opinion with these folks on the committee. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Dan.
Next, we have Jeff Farvor from Sitka. If you would state your name and affiliation for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Sure, thank you. My name is Jeff Farvor. I'm a career troller in Sitka. I'm also on the board of ATA and Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. I want to say thank you very much for bringing this forward. I think you see a lot of good stats in there about the value of the fishery and participation. One other one is that trolling is often in the top three most valuable fisheries in Southeast Alaska. And I say top three because it ties for second and third place with gill netting. And trolling clearly is one of the most affordable fisheries to get into that can provide, provide year-round employment, which is exactly why I chose this fishery. So this doesn't go to mention things like the raw fish tax that go to support the state coffers as well as fishing communities that the tax is generated from. In turn, those communities use that raw fish tax to support their harbors, their working waterfronts, and other key infrastructure. The resolution follows a string of supportive letters, donations, and other resolutions from many other communities and associations. I think there's a couple other things that might be of interest, hearing some of the nature of the great questions that you have. The southwestern killer whales range is pretty much confined to below from BC on down to California. Rarely do they come up here, and a lot of their food doesn't come up here either. It's a publicity stunt, this lawsuit is essentially, and I think you've heard a lot about that, including the EJA process, low-hanging fruit. We're not a corporate fishery that we can send full to DC and have constant presence down there to look after our interests. So it's tougher to pick fights, I think, with folks in their own backyard for political reasons. So clearly we're the low hanging fruit of the, probably down their list. They seek to eliminate marine fisheries as stated right on their website. So I think that gives the precedent setting nature of what they're after. And happy Valentine's Day to you all. And just really quick, I know there's one particular fishing family that wanted to call in, but I was just told they went to the hospital this morning to give birth to their new crew member. Thanks.
Well, please give them our congratulations.
Thank you. I will.
We have Michael Cohan from Juneau. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Michael Cohan. I am the Science and Policy Director for Sitka Salmon Shares. We are a direct-to-consumer seafood company sharing wild Alaska seafood to thousands of home cooks across the country while supporting small boat, Alaska fishermen, and coastal fishing communities. That means that we partner with fishermen and community-based seafood processors in Southeast Alaska as well as other areas of Alaska to source high-quality Alaska seafood, including troll, cod, southeast king salmon. We commend the House Fisheries Committee members in the state of Alaska for identifying the urgent need to address this issue and ask for ongoing state support and active participation in the impending decisions that will affect the process of sustainable management policies and practices, as well as the communities supported by this fishery. So we support House Joint Resolution 5. The closure of this fishery will greatly impact not only the economic stability for fishing communities in Southeast Alaska, but will also have amplified economic impacts to businesses like ours. We depend on this fishery and the resources it provides, and we support responsible management practices for sustainability of the resource and the ecosystems that these resources support. However, this extrapolated lawsuit that puts Southeast Alaska troll fishery in jeopardy while lacking scientific basis is irresponsible and likely irreversibly detrimental to the troll fleet and to many businesses that support sustainable wild Alaska seafood. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Linda Bankin. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you so much for taking this up today. Linda Bankin, I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, which, despite the name, is a mixed-gear group, including many members who exclusively depend on trolling for their income. I wanted to start by emphasizing, as I think members of the committee have already picked up, that we wouldn't have a 100-year-old fishery and that kind of a history if this wasn't a sustainable fishery and a fishery that had been extremely well managed by the state of Alaska and the Department of Fish and Game. You've heard a lot about the economic value of this fishery. I can underscore all of that testimony by saying what impact this would have on our members and on our communities. But maybe what I can add to the conversation is that there would be no real benefit of closing this fishery to the orcas that are the focus of the lawsuit. We worked with ATA to have a white paper written to go deep into what the real threats are to the southern resident killer whales in Puget Sound, and found quite clearly that they are threatened by industrial toxins, having one of the highest loads of any marine mammal anywhere in the world, by noise pollution. It's a huge shipping area, as I'm sure you're aware, with on average 35 container ships transiting Puget Sound, where these whales live on a daily basis, and water pollution more generally in the habitat that they depend on, as well as in the salmon that they eat. They're at risk because of these other threats, not because of fishing. And even if fishing was a threat, a fishery that occurs close to 1,000 miles away from where these whales live would not be the fishery that would have any impact on their continued survival. Alaska's worked hard to take care of salmon habitat. That hasn't always been the case in the Pacific Northwest, where compromises to salmon habitat have been made to maintain agriculture, through building dams to support the industrialization, to support the now close to 5 million people who live around these whales' habitat. The whales depend on salmon. The salmon depend on clean habitat. Alaska's done its part. Now it's time for Washington to do their part to take care of that habitat. And reaching to Alaska to trigger closure of our fisheries will not support these whales or support the salmon that the whales depend on. We support this resolution, really appreciate that you're taking it up and all that's in the resolution, and urge you to support it and move forward. Thanks so much for taking testimony today.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for all of those who testified. Seeing that there is no one else online, let me double check, make sure I didn't miss anyone. I will now close public testimony for HGR 5. For those who are watching online that did not have an opportunity to call and testify, you can submit your written testimony to HGR 5 to House Fisheries at akleg.gov, and we will be able to add that to the record. I will take a brief at ease for a moment. And we are back on record. We were taking an opportunity to print an amendment and consider the will of the committee. I would like to put on the record a welcome to Representative Kronk for joining us as a guest in the committee today. I will now be taking up amendment number one to HJR 5.
Thank you.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the amendment.
Thank you. And would you please state for the record what the amendment is for the people listening?
Sure. This amendment is on page 2, line 16, following the word "and," we'll insert the word "lower" to more accurately describe which part of the Columbia River Falls stocks we're referring to. So it's lower Columbia River.
I apologize. We're all so excited about it. Okay.
Yeah, and I think the purpose of spelling it out is to make really clear which fish we're talking about in the lower Columbia River.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Seeing no objections.
I remove my objection.
Okay. Thank you. We can do this. We can use proper procedure here. Are there any further amendments? Excuse me. Any further objections besides? Are there any further amendments? All right. Brief at ease. All right, back on the record. Amendment number one passes with no objection. Are there any further amendments? Seeing no further amendments, Representative McCabe.
Madam Chairman, I move House Joint Resolution number 133-LS0338/S from committee as amended.
Let me correct the record. House Joint Resolution number 5.
Number 5, sorry. Did I say 1? Number 5. 33-LS0338/S as amended.
Hearing no objections, we will move House Joint Resolution number 5 as amended from committee. That concludes our business for today. The House Special Committee on Fisheries will meet again next Tuesday, the 21st, to hear from the Governor's Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force and their final report that they concluded last year. Seeing there is no further business from the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It is 11:17 a.m.